Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher.
In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy.
In part, that was President Trump's response today to the devastating shootings over the weekend in El Paso and Dayton. The country has once again been reeling over gun violence on a massive scale. At this hour, 31 dead and over 50 injured from the Texas and Ohio shootings. So what is spurring these shootings, and can anything be done about them? Tonight, we discuss some of the issues that may be linked to the violence, from gun laws to domestic terrorism to race relations, just to name a few. Joining us tonight for this important conversation is Professor Shirley Carswell. She's a lecturer with Howard University's School of Communication. She's recently published an article entitled, Have We Surrendered to Gun Violence in Urban America? Federal neglect stymies efforts to stop the slaughter among young black men, Professor Carswell says. Also in studio, Margarita DeLone. She's a member of the board of directors with the Greater Washington Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And on the phone line with us is Dr. Barry J. Ballack, author of Modern American Extremism and Domestic Terrorism, an encyclopedia of extremists and extremist groups. We thank you all so much. Dr. Ballack is also an associate professor. The phone lines again are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'd like to hear from you, and we'd like you to join this important conversation. Dr. Ballack, if you can start us off, can anything be done about these mass shootings? It's a couple days later, and that seems to be now where the conversation is going.
Well, I think we're all, we've all been shocked by the events of the last 48 hours or so. But it's become all too commonplace in our country to face these and then within a 48 or 72-hour period kind of forget them as we move on to something else in the national conversation. I think what we need to do is we need to have a serious conversation, particularly at the federal level, among our congresspeople and the president and others who are decision-makers, to really examine our gun laws, to examine whether or not guns like AK-47s and AR-15s should be part of the conversation when we're talking about the Second Amendment. It's incredible to think that the damage that was done, the deaths that occurred, the injuries that occurred in Dayton, occurred within a 30-second span of time. 9 people dead, over 20 people injured in a 30-second span of time. Terrorism has existed since time immemorial. But the methods of killing and the manner in which we can kill people on a massive scale due to these weapons has increased dramatically, and we've got to find a solution to these things. And the country has to have a serious conversation about whether or not these sorts of weapons were intended by the founders to be included in the Second Amendment.
Professor Carswell, this conversation has gone on and on, right, since many of the mass shootings, and sort of we can roll down the line, especially the mass shooting of the young student in Newtown, Connecticut. And so most of us should know that these weapons should not be used against humans, but they are. And so why, in your opinion, has nothing really been done? And is that the correct way to describe it, as in nothing?
Nothing has been done that will prevent those things from happening again, as we can see. What has happened is that the NRA, the National Rifle Association, has basically got a lock on Congress and some local lawmakers and has prevented them from funding any efforts to look at gun research, what causes the violence, gun safety, any kind of prevention efforts. And so some of these congressmen are, have received in the 7 figures from the NRA. And so naturally, they're not going to vote anything that would be against the NRA's interests. And I think that's what's happened time and time again. You have lawmakers who, on the one side, seem willing to act, but then in the face of losing that funding, quickly back down and hope that it passes until the next time.
And the NRA has taken a somewhat of a hit in the last year or so. Their finances have been looked at. Mm-hmm. They sort of saw how they were abusing some of the monies that the donors were putting out there. So why is it that they still have a lock? Their membership is not that large. What is it, about 5,000? I think the numbers, I may be off.
Yeah.
But it is not a large number of members. So why is it that the Republicans, at least seeing the NRA in a sort of a weak spot right now, still adhere to those policies and that lobbying, in your opinion?
You know, I think it comes down to a real fear of becoming the minority in a country that, until now, you know, they've been in control. And I think that they take very seriously the notion that, you know, they have a right to bear arms to protect themselves. And so then you get into the whole debate about immigration and race and a lot of other topics. But I think that's where the NRA's strength comes from, is that they are definitely looking to retain their lock on society in America.
Margarita De Leon, a race is an issue in the El Paso shootings. In the manifesto of the shooter, he talked about immigration and wanting to stop those who were coming into the country, specifically Hispanics. What are your thoughts on that tie into the shootings and those of Latino background being sort of targeted, not sort of, but targeted?
Well, my take on this, unfortunately, is that we have a lot of politicians nowadays that are using hate and this kind of language to basically go to our basest instincts of fear of the other. Fear of someone taking your job or taking over your community. White supremacy, for example, is all about fear. They're afraid of giving up what power they perceive that they have. And that's part of the problem. Unfortunately, one of the examples I can give you is at a lot of the rallies that are held. They use the poem The Snake to compare immigrants, and The Snake is based on a song by Al Wilson, and it's very powerful, and that's one of the things that are used at the rally. But anytime you dehumanize people, that's where you come into this problem, where you feed into this mentality of fear that a lot of these people have that are on the edge. They unfortunately believe that somehow they are going to not have a job, not have access to things, and that it's someone else's fault. So Hispanics are being scapegoated, and I think it's a shame that any politician, no matter who he is, uses that to gain control over us.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The phone lines are open. And I should amend something I said a little earlier. I said the NRA had about 5,000 members. It's 5 million. Yeah. But still, in the scope of things and the influence that they have, you know, the argument still could be that's not a whole lot of people compared to how much influence they have specifically over the GOP. Back to the phone lines we go, and Steve is calling from Fairfax. Go right ahead, Steve, with your question or comment.
Yeah, my comment is I hear a lot already again that the solution coming from our politics. Politics is not the solution. This was an act of, these were acts of evil, and politics can't solve the problem of evil. We have to look towards our faith community to call it for what it is, which is evil, and rally the community behind that. Politics can't deal with this. You all are singling out the NRA and El Paso. Well, Antifa, this guy in Dayton, Ohio, I'm from Ohio. I'm from Cincinnati, 45 minutes away. I've been to the Oregon District plenty of times. This guy had a strong leanings towards Antifa. Antifa sprays cement in people's faces. That is evil, but nobody's talking about that. And so all I'm saying is we have to balance the rhetoric and the analysis and look at this as a problem of evil that people of faith can solve when they come together, define it, and because it transcends human behavior.
All right, thank you so much, Steve. I want to let our guests sort of get in on this. And Dr. Balick, You know, Steve says we've got to move away from politics, but there is a heightened focus on the words that politicians use, and in particular, President Trump. What are your thoughts on some who say that it's the rhetoric of President Trump that is helping to fuel some of these shootings, in particular, these shootings specifically in El Paso?
Well, words matter. We know that. I have to agree with Representative Tim Ryan of Ohio, who was asked, is President Trump a white supremacist or a white nationalist? And those terms are very interchangeable, and we could talk about that if we wanted to. But he said, I'm not sure if he identifies himself as such. But those who do identify themselves as white nationalists and or white supremacists see in President Trump a kindred spirit. And I think that is very telling, that they feel emboldened, they feel that they have an ally in the White House, and that the things that have been talked about on the internet forums and so forth, which largely were kept in the shadows for the last, 10 or 15 years, have come out in the open now because they do not feel that they are going to be stigmatized as they once were. You know, it was really interesting. If you look at the rise of right-wing extremist groups over the course of time, you always sort of saw right-wing groups sort of diminish during the time of Republican administrations because they felt like causes such as gun control and causes such as, the ideas of faith-based solutions to these sorts of problems would be extolled by Republican administrations. We saw a dramatic increase with the Obama administration because of opposition and perceived racism towards an African-American president. But these groups have exploded during the Donald Trump administration, and it's because they now see that they have a voice, a public voice, that was not there previously.
Margarita Delon, there are some Hispanic families, some Hispanic residents in America who are coming out now saying that they are living in fear. What are your thoughts on that? And are you hearing any of that from the Hispanic community, that there is a certain fear now that they will be targeted beyond what President Trump has talked about with ICE, but now with deadly force, outside of sort of the governmental bureaucratic process?
Of course. I mean, in one sense, I can tell you I've already been a big victim out of it. I was accosted simply because I was taking too long of getting out of a vehicle, and I was called all kinds of words that I would not repeat on a radio show, and told that I was a wetback and that I needed to leave the country. Now, those kinds of things, if I had fed into that, could have escalated. Who knows to what? And that's part of what's happening, because people are looking at each other and just assuming, just by how they look, of who they are, what they are, and if they're Americans or not. And all of this rhetoric, I mean, again, it's about making another group of people be an other. These are words that have power, that unfortunately, if you look at things like Genocide Watch, they are words to dehumanize and to be able to come up with ideas about, separating us into different groups and being able to do things that are uncalled for. When have you seen children in cages? I mean, that's something that is not part of our American values.
So you see the two interconnected in some ways, these shootings and the president's in particular policies on immigration.
Let's begin with how he kicked off his campaign. Mexicans are, according to his words, rapists, murderers, drug dealers, and maybe some are good people. Those are not the words of somebody that we need to put on a pedestal that is about inspiring us as a country. That's not part of our values. Just substitute that word for any race or any other nationality, and you'd be up in arms. And frankly, he should never have been elected.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to our phone lines. And Anthony's calling from Northeast D.C. Go right ahead, Anthony.
Good evening, everybody. I'm like this. It starts from the top. And we know that President 45 has started this thing when he went down to the escalator and said those things about Mexicans. We also know that what he said about black African Americans, especially with calling them rats and all this. And we know that this is the man that started this. He's not going to change. And as to me, that's just lip service, what he said this morning. And to me, he and the Republican Party and Mitch McConnell, they're never going to change. They think they're right, but they're wrong. And as long as he's in office and we got a chance to vote these people out, and then will we see Mitch McConnell be the minority leader? He would rather retire before he give up his majority leader position.
All right. Thank you so much, Anthony. Let me let Professor Carswell sort of jump into that. And that's sort of, again, back to the political thing.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, when President Obama was in office, though he came out against gun violence, right, though at some point he had a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House, he could not get new gun laws passed.
Right.
So I think I go back to our original question then. If President Obama will put out this long essay today talking about gun violence and hatred in America, and we can't, you know, stigmatize those as others, how should we expect then any kind of legislation to be passed, even if Chuck Schumer says, come back into session, Mitch McConnell, and pass these gun restrictions that we have passed in the House?
Right. I think you've hit on it. It's not just a GOP issue. There are some Democrats who are beholden to the NRA. So it's not simply a political, you know, party issue. We as a country have to figure out if we want the freedom to carry AK-47s and, you know, these weapons of mass destruction, and if that freedom is more important than human life.
And do you see anything differently what's going on in urban America versus now we see it happening in rural America in El Paso, Dayton, Midwest? But your article was about the gun violence in urban America in about 20 seconds.
Yeah.
I know I'm giving you a short clip there.
Basically, the focus of my article was on the continuing violence in the urban communities and how that violence far outweighs, in terms of sheer numbers, the violence that you see from mass shootings. And, you know, of course, for different reasons, the mass shootings get more of the attention.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. Professor Shirley Carswell, lecturer with Howard University School of Communications, thank you so much for joining us and adding your expertise. If you're on the phone line, hang on. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Stand by. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight, our focus is the mass shootings that are taking place in the United States and what, if anything, can be done about them. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'd like you to join us. In studio with us is Margaret DeLone. She's a member of the Board of Directors with the Greater Washington Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Also in studio is Brittany White, lead organizer of Faith in Texas's Live Free Campaign and Community Justice Action Fund. And on the phone line with us is Dr. Barry J. Ballack, author, Modern American Extremism and Domestic Terrorism, an Encyclopedia of Extremists and Extremist Groups. We thank you so much all for joining us. The phone lines again are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines, and Marvin is calling from Waldorf. Go right ahead, Marvin.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Bryan? Thank you, and good evening to your panel. Hey, thank you for taking my call and allowing me to be a part of this discussion. You know, first, as to the mass shooting, domestic terrorism, I really don't see any benefit from calling back Congress to pass any laws for gun legislation. It's going to be the same outcome. So the Second Amendment, as we've seen in years past, is just one, is something that's very hard, is polarizing. It's very, very political. As far as the Republican Party, that's something they're going to hold on to. That's going to keep their base in line by fighting for the Second Amendment. So I think that's a waste. But I would like to see them come in and be a push. I'd like to see a voice, a loud voice, and a loud push for the white supremacist groups, the Aryans, nations, to be labeled as a terrorist organization, domestic terror organization. And therefore, they would have more tools, more police resources, the FBI, the Justice Department, to shut down the sites, shut down these organizations, disband them. They'd be easier for them to go and stop them, put a stop to it.
All right, thank you. So
you look at what happened in Toledo. You look at what happened in Texas. It's all white supremacists, the ones before that. So if it had been the shooting of the foot, it was a black organization that did this, or somebody who was saying that they're, you know, associated with Black Lives Matter or Black Panther, in a heartbeat.
All right, thank you so much, Marvin. Let me.
Heartbeat, they would have labeled them as a domestic.
Okay, let me. Dr. Balick, he's taking the position, right, of saying, you know, listen, we would go right at domestic terrorism if it was a person of color. Does Marvin have a point?
I think, you know, there was an interesting statistic I saw this morning that they said that there has now been as many people killed since 9/11 in acts of domestic terrorism. This is the FBI saying this, as there was killed at 9/11. And yet we are still sitting here. You know, we know after 9/11, we had massive resources, federal government resources devoted to striking back against terrorism. I think that there is this sense in America among the white middle-aged males particularly, but also young males, about the loss of power and influence. And this is real. And the interesting thing about this is that some of these feelings of angst and powerlessness are the same sorts of things we can equate to those who are who have committed acts of international terrorism, Islamic terrorism, and so forth. We know that many of the young people in the Middle East who feel as though they have been abused by the United States, they have some of the same sorts of feelings of powerlessness and, you know, non-political action as some of these individuals in the United States are feeling today. They see a United States that once was white and we becoming heterogeneous, and that is a tough thing for a lot of them to swallow.
Brittany White, she is the statewide manager of Live Free, correct, Brittany?
That is correct.
All right. Tell us your thoughts on gun violence. Your organization works on that, your perspective on it throughout the country, where it's happening. You know, we had Professor Carswell in talking about her expertise in the article that she wrote was on gun violence in urban areas. But really, we are seeing these sort of mass shootings, right, everywhere. But we know on a day-to-day basis, especially in communities of color, this gun violence is a regular occurrence. Do the mass shootings somewhat overshadow those day-to-day tragedies that are happening all the time?
I'm also honored to be a board member for the Community Justice Action Fund. And what I appreciate about this organization is that they are out here grinding every day when people are not talking about gun violence, trying to help funders understand that mass shootings are a very small percentage of the gun violence we see in America. I'm from Dayton, Ohio. I'm proudly from Dayton, Ohio. My family currently dwells in Dayton, Ohio. And the irony of this whole situation is about a week and a half ago, I was sitting at a bar in Dayton, Ohio, talking to one of my favorite cousins about the outcome of her niece, who have been shot up in Dayton, Ohio. And so now to see this conversation framed, yes, it is absolutely important that we condemn white supremacy as the evil that it is in this country. I heard one of your callers talk about what is the faith community's part in this. I organize faith communities in Texas, and we should pray and act. We should condemn white supremacy from our pulpits, and we should call our congressmen and demand that they have moral courage for people like my cousin and for those 9 people who were killed in the Oregon district in Dayton, Ohio.
Margarita De Leon, DeLone, can Congress actually pass any kind of legislation that will, I'm looking for the right word, that would satisfy, you believe, Americans based on what we see happening? If they just do something, will that be enough? Or is something not enough? It has to be something specific.
Well, one of the things that I would like to advocate for is the abolition of the Dickey Amendment, to have people actually...
What is that?
That it was the amendment that was passed basically stripping the CDC of being able to study the issue of gun violence. It is an issue that is encompassing. We're here now today because it's top of the news, because this has been brought to everyone's attention. But as Brittany has stated, this is an ongoing issue in all of our communities. I mean, in Los Angeles, for example, I know that there's gun violence on a daily basis amongst African Americans and amongst Latinos. These are people that are dying that, you know, sometimes innocents are caught in the crossfire. But bottom line, these are young men that could be rehabilitated, that might be able to contribute to society, and instead they're dying prematurely. Now, our Congress, our Senate, they need to get together. If we were able, as Dr. Balick was stating, to come up with the Patriot Act and so many other legislation that was passed to help against the war on terrorism from overseas, why are we not able to fix these solutions? We have put people on the moon. So obviously we can do things. There are things like mental health that we need to resolve. There are things like, let's stop the automatic, semi-automatic rifles. Who needs a semi-automatic rifle? That was not part of the Constitution or part of the Second Amendment. I'm sorry. That did not exist. So let's just do away with that. No human being needs to have that unless in the army or in a police force. The other thing is that we also need to outlaw the bump stocks. We need to increase mandatory training. If you're going to have a weapon, just like if you drive a car, you are mandated that you are going to learn, right? So the same thing, gun safety, that needs to be taught. And responsibility right along with it. Your gun gets stolen because you didn't safely lock it, you're going to be liable for that. So it's an entire set of things that needs to happen, and we need to work together to make them happen with the faith community, with NRA, with everyone at the table. Give everyone a voice.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our phone lines are open. Dr. Balick, before I lose you, I did want to ask you this. The issue of what they call soft targets, right, where many of these communities are saying, hey, listen, if you would allow us to carry guns openly, maybe we wouldn't have these kinds of situations like we had in El Paso at the Walmart. And Texas, I believe, may even be an open carry in some areas.
It
but
is.
There are soft spots, right, where some pro-gun advocates say if you allow us just to carry guns in any open areas, we could stop a gunman like the one in El Paso. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you may be able to stop a gunman like that, but he's still going to take out 15 or 20 or 30 people before you fire at him. And you may take out 2 or 3 or 4 innocent civilians in the process. I mean, you know, we know that we have been, the news media has reported that the gunman in Dayton was taken out in 30 seconds by law enforcement who were right there on the scene. And in those 30 seconds, he killed 9 people and wounded more than 20
mm-hmm.
with the capacities of weapons that he had. So we're talking about these weapons. And as I've been sitting here listening to the conversation, you know, the NRA, obviously, we have this power, but maybe one of the things that we need to start talking about is not necessarily the gun control, but if the NRA has such massive influence because of the money it donates, then let's reform our campaign finance laws. Let's make it so that corporations, which the Supreme Court ruled, I believe, 4 years ago, corporations are entities that have their own First Amendment rights. Let's make it so these massive corporations can't donate money to influence policymakers. And we have to come together as a country. We have to have Republicans and Democrats speak with one voice. The saddest thing to me today in President Trump's news conference or his statement was that, you know, we as a country need to come together to condemn white supremacy and hatred and racism and so forth. And yet he, the President of the United States, did not take that forum to himself condemn those very things. In fact, as was pointed out time and time again today, his rhetoric has been exactly the opposite of that time and time and time again. The president is an opinion leader. He is a person who Americans have traditionally looked to. We're looking for him to tell us these things are wrong, to condemn them, and to, if he has been party to these things, say, I will stop and I will try to do better. And we have not seen that from this president. And I think that's one of the most disconcerting things that we're seeing right now.
Brittany White, I know you wanted to come in a few moments ago, and you had a couple of comments on some issues or a particular issue.
Yes, I wanted to just go back to this narrative around the perpetrators, because I think this is very important to flesh out, because oftentimes what you hear to excuse violence when we talk about urban gun violence is black on black crime and white on white crime. But I want to be clear that the statistics show that the race of people are more than likely to kill that same race of people. And so when we say black on black crime, we do a disservice when we don't mention white on white crime as well. Also, I want to talk about the way that women are erased out of being gun victims. As I stated before, my cousin was recently shot in Dayton, Ohio, and she's a woman. And so when we talk about this, just like when we talk about mass incarceration, criminal justice, or any issues of violence, we erase women completely out of that conversation and out of the solutions. And they have a very unique experience within gun violence. Also, when the conversation around soft targets.
Hold that, because I want to be able to flesh that out
okay.
without us cutting you off on break.
Absolutely.
Very important point. And I want to follow up, too, about the issue men versus women, boys versus girls, and why you...
Not versus, with the difference.
Well, that when I say versus, I mean the way it's portrayed and the attention. So I want to get into why you think that might be. But we're going to take a break. If you're on the phone lines, stay right there. If not, they're open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. Barry J. Ballack, thank you so much for joining us. He's the author of Modern American Extremism and Domestic Terrorism, an encyclopedia of extremists and extremist groups. We thank you for joining us. The Insight segment will continue right after this timeout. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment, and tonight we are talking specifically about mass shootings in the United States, and our focus obviously is on the shootings that took place over the weekend in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio, and whether anything can be done about this, whether political leaders have, as some would say, the courage to make some changes that have not come forth after previous mass shootings. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Brittany White is the statewide manager for Live Free in Texas, particularly.
Faith in Texas, yes.
Faith in Texas. And so, Brittany, let's talk a little bit more about those soft targets that I had mentioned to Dr. Barry J. Ballack, who was on with us a little earlier, and meaning, you know, giving folks weapons now to sort of protect themselves, and you don't really see that as a viable idea.
Absolutely not. I am horrified at the idea of us.
And that idea is real, right?
Absolutely. I've heard this in credible circles. And what is so disturbing about that is, as society, we are placing a lot of trust in regular people's judgment to discern who is actually dangerous and who they feel threatened by. And in a racialized society where we have seen Black people and indigenous people, but Black folks in particular, targeted by white people who feel threatened as they engage in everyday activities like participating in barbecues, going to the pool, for them to be empowered to shoot people down, that is very dangerous and very frightening, and that is not a viable solution, or is it sustainable?
Before we went to break, you had also mentioned that you felt like the coverage of female victims versus male victims is different. Why do you believe that is the case? Because some may say, well, Brittany, the coverage of the young mother who shielded her child, right, but her life was lost along with her husband, garnered a lot of attention. So is that an anomaly in your opinion?
I think we just fetishize mass shooting victims. They're more attractive and comfortable for us to deal with as a society. Whereas the woman, the baby mama who got shot down in the hood in the midst of gun violence, then we have these moral arguments within ourselves of, did this person deserve to die? We place ourselves in a seat of judgment, and there's a hierarchy in this country about who is valued. And unfortunately, people like myself who come from urban communities, we fall at the bottom of that hierarchy, and it's completely intolerable. But I want to give a special shout out to the Community Justice Action Fund and Live Free National, who have been working on proven strategies to reduce urban gun violence. And I want to engage all of your callers to please, please, please join us on Tuesday, August 6th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we have a Communities of Color organizing call. You will have to sign up to receive the login information, and that is at cjasandjerryactionfund.org/call-RSVP. Please join us on this call so that you can be solution-minded and work with us as we invest in these proven strategies.
And we'll make sure you give that number out once again. Our number, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The phone lines are open. Your questions or comments are welcome. Margarita DeLone, you wanted to make a comment?
I just wanted to add to what Brittany was saying. The fact, for example, recently that our president decided to pound on Baltimore and on Elijah Cummings, one of his statements was to the effect that it was an infested area, that no human would live there, essentially basically saying that all the people there were subhuman. So basically what Brittany is saying is, therefore, if somebody dies in that area, they deserved it because somehow they were living there. That's part of the whole conversation that's just based on hate, and that's not going to get us towards solutions. So,
well, the president also said today in his speech, and I don't know, I'd like to get your comments on this and whether this was surprising, but he blamed this violence over the weekend on video games.
No.
Mental illness.
No.
And he said mental illness pulled the trigger. But he did say that we have to disavow white supremacy. So are you surprised by any of those comments?
No, I am not surprised, because it has to be anything but what the real actual problem is. There always has to be a scapegoat to point to excuse people from actually attacking the root of the problem. The problem is we do not invest in our communities. Dayton is a community. I'm from Dayton, so I say this with authority and passion. They have taken jobs out of Dayton. Dayton has experienced redlining. I grew up watching my teachers constantly go on strike in Dayton public school systems, just trying to get paid a livable, sustainable wage. And so until we talk about the social determinants of the people who dwell in Dayton, Ohio, then we cannot talk about the actual problem being people playing Fortnite. No, we are going to bear this responsibility as a society, and Congress is going to do what they need to do to allocate funding to correct the way that they have divested out of Ohio in the Midwest, period. And then they're going to pass some policies to actually keep people of safe, particularly black people in that community.
Margarita, do you believe that the president's position on mental illness pulling the trigger will fly? Because the NRA issued a statement in support of what President Trump saying, that mental issue is the problem. Yet Arthur Evans, the chief executive of the American Psychological Association, says, no, the majority of these shootings have little to do with mental illness. Even in 1 in 5 adults in the United States, they say almost a little over 46 million have some form of mental illness. And so if mental illness was the issue, according to him and the association, there would be far greater mass shootings. So will the issue of mental illness be the topic of conversation, or do you think that won't fly? Because it seems the president is making that as the root cause of the problem.
No, because the issue with mental illness, when you realize that you are doing something wrong, that flies out. A mentally ill person, and this having served on a jury involving a mentally ill person, he was found guilty in spite of the mental illness because he covered it up. These people took steps, they planned it, etc. That to me is not a sign of a mental illness to the point that they decided to shoot up all these people. They made plans. That takes mental acuity right there. So no, that's not going to fly. Now, having said that, it is part of the problem. It should be part of the conversation. But also, for example, urban violence, part of the conversation should be hope. These are communities that don't have a hope. They don't have hope because, as Brittany was saying, there are no jobs. There are no dignity. There is not schooling, decent schooling. That we funneled all the school budgets to charter schools and to private school options, etc. Public schools need to be funded. We need to take care of our own. And we need to take care of our own by beginning to take care of this issue head on, and it includes urban violence. That is a darn shame when we have multitudes of people dying on a daily basis, and we are so inured to it that it's just a blip on the screen.
Brittany, former congressman from Texas, Beto O'Rourke, came out and basically called President Trump a racist, tied the shootings to President Trump's comments. Beto O'Rourke is running for president. Tim Ryan, congressman from Ohio, may even be from that. Does he represent the part of Dayton?
No, I believe he's the northern
part.
Northern Ohio.
Right. But he came out today and said, Mitch McConnell, get back into the Senate, pass legislation, and basically he says, the Senate, get off of your donkey. I won't use the word that he used.
Come on now.
Yeah. So do you expect, especially with the Democratic debates now, do you expect this to be at the forefront of the conversation with the debates and the political conversation, or will it go like many of the conversations following these shootings? It'll kind of go die down.
Well, shout out to Beto O'Rourke. I met with him while he was running for Ted Cruz's seat in Dallas, talking about criminal justice last year. And I made a cameo in his HBO documentary.
And we have to look that up now.
What I would say to that is, Margarita made a great point about the conversation being around urban gun violence. It has to start there. Mm-hmm. And so Congress has to begin to figure out, who do they prioritize in this country? Do black bodies dying in the streets because people are conditioned into violence? Part of what is wrong, why the Congress does not feel compelled to act, is they don't understand the lived experience of what it means to be poor and black in urban America. And what they should have to do is go into the hospital, go into those emergency rooms, and absorb the pain of angry black mothers as they grieve over the bullet-ridden bodies of their children. That maybe that will motivate them to go back to D.C. and actually pass some policy. Cory Booker has been calling for gun violence solutions repeatedly. Now that it's sexy to talk about gun violence, I'm sure that many of the presidential candidates will implement it into their platform. But my question to society is, in 2 weeks, when it's no longer popular, when the news has moved on to something else, when these organizations are fighting with funders to get the money, who's still going to be talking about gun violence? Because in Dayton, they still going to be getting shot up.
Let's have our listeners know where they can contact you if you'd like them to do that, or your organization, and especially the event that's coming up before we leave?
Yes, so you can reach me at Brittany, Brittany, at cjactionfund.org.
Thank you so much, Brittany. And Margarita DeLone, I'll give you the last comment. First, at the end, make sure you let folks know how they can get in touch with you. But I know you wanted to piggyback what Brittany had to say.
I wanted to add something to it, because the reality is that over many decades now, we have made the poor somehow criminal. And we've connected the two, somehow irresponsible, etc., that we are to blame for our own things. And having been a single mother of four in the city when I was barely making it, one of them quadriplegic and blind with many medical issues, I can tell you, you know, the first thing that we have to give people is hope. And there has to be something that we are involved with the inner city so that these things stop. I was lucky my kids didn't get into those things, but I was, as a single mother, it was difficult.
Margarita DeLone, how can folks get in touch with you at the Chamber of Commerce or any websites you think folks can go to gather more information?
They can get in touch with me at 100%compassion@gmail.com.
Margaret DeLone, a member of the Board of Directors with the Greater Washington Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, thank you so much for joining us. And Brittany White, thank you, as she is the statewide manager with Live Free in Texas and a native of Dayton, Ohio. Thank you so much, and our condolences to any friends and acquaintances that you may have lost or may have been.
Shout out to my city. I love y'all.
All right, thank you so much. And we thank all of you for calling in today and joining this conversation. That's the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, August 5th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Have a great night.